to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and a fun one here this week with Jeff Shackelford. You guys all know Jeff from Golf Channel and Golf Week and jeffshackelford.com, and he does an unbelievable job. We talked for nearly an hour, so I'm not going to spend much time here getting you set for Jeff. I just want to get into the conversation. One little note I wanted to make is I have started the Psycho Scorecard. I think I did it about a year and a half ago, which a Psycho Scorecard is one that is all over the place. It's got birdies and eagles and doubles and bogeys, and it's colorful, if you will. It's got a lot of those. It's got the yellow and the red and the green and all that stuff on the websites around the professional tours. On Mondays, I'm going to post the Psycho Scorecard of the week every week. This week's winner in quotes, but I actually think it is a distinction. It's to say, golf is silly. That's the whole point of this thing. This week's winner was Justin Lower on the web.com tour, did it the last round. If you haven't seen the card, go to my Twitter page, at Shane Bacon. If you ever have a submission, use the hashtag Psycho Scorecard and send it to me on Twitter. And I love getting them. I love checking them out. I mean, they happen on every tour, every week, every year, all the time, because this is a silly game, and it is really hard to be consistent. So it's just a little nod to the game of golf, and it's something fun we do. So send those my way. And before we get to Jeff, I wanted to let you know about the FootJoy, who of course has the number one shoe in golf, the FootJoy FJ Fury. It's designed from the inside out. FJ Fury delivers stability where you need it and comfort where you want it. And what makes FJ Fury so special is an internal fit system called the True Fit System, which focuses on fit, comfort, and support. Those are three things we all need in golf. And its all-new D3 outsole ensures a solid, stable platform to generate power, while the super soft midsole delivers incredible comfort and cushioning. Tour proven by dozens of players, experience all-around comfort and performance with the FJ Fury, and you can learn more at footjoy.com. They sent me a couple of pair of them. They are absolutely comfortable. They're great for guys that walk or for carts or for both, whatever you do around the golf course, just going to the range. The FJ Fury is absolutely worth it. And before we get to Jeff, I also wanted to let you know about BetDSI. BetDSI does a great job with golf. I think that's something people don't understand, is that golf is one of the most fun sports in the world to bet on, and BetDSI does it better than anybody. It's a top-rated site on all betting review sites. You can use your knowledge to go against friends, to go against the field. They have props weekly. They have weekly odds for every event, including this week in Mexico. I'm going to give you just a little player that I think has a great chance this week at the WGC event. I like Paul Casey to win. Got to drive the ball straight. He does a good job at that. Put the ball in play, putt well, get it up and down around these greens. We saw Phil Mickelson win there last year. That's my outside pick, and somebody I think has pretty good odds. Consider if you look past maybe the top 5-10 players. You can do all that at BetDSI. Of course, they offer options for everything outside of golf: NFL, NCAA football, NBA, NHL, UFC, all of those things. You can bet at BetDSI. Use the promo code BACON, and you'll get 100% bonus match. BACON, that's my last name. BACON, 100% bonus match. I play there myself. I recommend BetDSI if you want to add some excitement to the fights and to the golf tournaments and to the professional sports that you love watching. It's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI. So check that out. And like I'm saying, Paul Casey, that's my pick this week. That's who I think is going to walk away a champion in Mexico. Okay, let's get to Jeff Shackelford. And we welcome back to the clubhouse one of my favorite influencers in all of golf. He loves when you call him that. Jeff Shackelford, of course. JeffShackelford.com does a great job at Golf Week and, of course, on Golf Channel. Coming off really kind of a hometown game for you at the LA Open and the Genesis Open. Is it nice when you actually get to go home after a work day?
Oh, it's a great week. It's Torrey Pines was a great week this year weather-wise, but when you're that close to the venue, it's pretty special.
And it was an interesting week, I would say, for golf, for the PGA Tour. We started the week with controversy. We ended the week with controversy. It feels like, I keep saying this about the NBA, and I love the NBA, is it seems like the focus of the NBA currently is so much less about what's actually happening on the court. It's about where guys are going to go and where they're going to sign and who they're talking to. And they're dictating their own, basically, personalities and where they're going to be the next 5 years. this week felt a little like that. There was some great golf happening. Of course, Saturday night was great with what Tiger was doing, and Phil makes birdie, or makes eagle on 10. But didn't it feel a little like the week was controlled by storylines that had nothing to do with how the guys were playing?
It was, and that's a good analogy with the NBA. I don't know what the point is that it turns off fans, because I think the NBA season's so long that some of that drama is fun, and I think you could make the case that golf is the same way, that the season is pretty long, and so some of these little dramas are interesting to people. The problem with the golf one, and maybe it is similar to the NBA this way, to me it feels like we've reached a point where years of coddling, years of not enforcing some rules, years of telling players how special they are, and no, you don't have to do that interview. No, you don't have to go sign autographs. That it's catching up. That we're seeing some cases of guys who are just out of touch and behavior that should have been treated more harshly or by enforcing the rules has convinced them they can kind of do their own thing. And so in the cases of Kuchar, Garcia, and Holmes, these are three people who have been doing the things that they got in trouble for a long time, and without anybody slapping them, they've kind of continued on, and it's all coming together at the same time, which isn't a great look for the sport.
Yeah, it's. I've talked to a few players. You know, we've had a couple of days now to kind of look back at what happened on Sunday, and I'm going to say this to start. And I said this on Twitter, and I got grilled for it from a lot of golf fans, is this isn't a J.B. Holmes problem. We're obviously talking about pace of play. J.B. Holmes takes a long time because he knows there's not going to be any repercussions. I mean, he knows he's not going to get penalized. He knows nobody's going to say anything for him. And if you think about this being a Saturday or Sunday thing, I mean, we were talking about this at Torrey Pines last year. I mean, this was a year ago that this, again, quote-unquote, made headlines. You know, J.B. Holmes took 4 minutes to hit a shot and ended up laying up. And I, again, don't fault the players. I fault him because it is a courtesy to say, I'm not going to take 2.5 minutes to hit a putt, because that obviously is taken away from how you're going to play. But I've talked to a few players over the last couple of days. I've heard that fast players were intentionally slowing down over the weekend in hopes that they'd get put on the clock. They didn't get put on the clock. And I've heard from players that are saying that there's basically a divide, if you will, amongst the players that like to play fast versus the players that like to slow down. And it's basically, when you're paired with those guys, you know what you're in for 5 hours. And to me, that is basically saying you're doing it the right way, yet you're the one that's actually going to be in trouble here because you're not going to be able to get into the flow of your game. Do you get that same sense, considering you're out on the beat for a lot of the time of the year? I mean, is that kind of the divide there, the fast players and the slow players, and they just basically kind of butt heads when they get paired together?
It's part of it. I mean, there were multiple dimensions to the pace problems of Riviera that were not player-related. I wrote a piece on the Sunday before for Golf Week about some of the logjam issues that happened there because the guys hit it longer. So there are a couple par fives and a short par four, the 10th. I mean, one player laid up over the final 36 holes on the 10th hole. So it's a par three.
I saw that piece you wrote, by the way.
So you have that element. Then the greens got faster Sunday. And Riviera's greens, when they get fast, can be pretty scary. Even though they're not really that undulating, they just can be scary. So you have that. And then you have players consulting their green reading books as much as ever. So that slows people down who are even fast players. You know, Justin Thomas, I don't get the Jordan Spieth. I think because he talks a lot, he gets branded as a super slow player. I've watched him quite a bit last week. I didn't see a slow golfer there. That was just me, maybe. I don't know. I just didn't see it. So you have those things, and then you get into the guys who are not ready to play, which I saw way too much of. And I think that's probably the biggest gripe with JB. Television normally can mask that, but when they're in the last few groups and there's nowhere else to go, you get to watch the whole routine and how awful it is and how he's not doing much prep work before it's his turn to hit. But I watched Cody Gribble with Tiger quite a bit on the weekend, and another player who is not ready to play a lot of the time or just randomly takes a lot of time on some putts, and he isn't fast to begin with. So there are different issues, and different players do different things. And then, of course, you had people cited, as you just noted, Justin Thomas a few times. Well, a smart player, I think, adapts to who they're playing with. Otherwise, they'll really lose their mind. I mean, I watched a ton of Thomas, Rory, and Tiger, and those three could get around Riviera in about at a leisurely pace at about 2 hours and 30 minutes if there was nobody in front of them. Just playing normal golf, walking with a caddy, they just don't waste much time.
Right.
They don't rush. But it's such a pleasure. And they clearly, I know why Tiger rigged that pairing or asked for that pairing again, because it's pace related. I mean, he played so well on Saturday with Cody Gribble setting up shop, not being ready. And I finally tweeted it on Sunday morning because Tiger was still playing well and Gribble was taking his time. And I thought it was really impressive how well Tiger played with a player in the group making him wait a lot before he actually hit his putts. But I didn't sense he slowed down to fit the cause. So, anyway, so they have multiple ways and problems here, and then the lack of enforcement issue, and it's very layered. But ultimately, for me, it's green speed and lack of enforcement are the two things that are the problem. And I don't mind on Sunday when somebody spends a lot of time and it's a big shot and it adds to the drama. But in the case this week, you're talking about the same person who, in his own way, forced them to go into Monday last year at Torrey Pines. at least visually he did by how long he took on 18. That was a playoff, and there were a lot of different components to that. But everybody's takeaway from that was he slowed everything down. So here he is again, and we're short on daylight. Everybody's nervous on whether they're going to finish the tournament, and it's the same guy and who has kind of the same entitled attitude. So it's a mess.
Yeah, and that's my point. My point, and again, we can talk about how it was tough to watch, and as golf fans, I mean, you're a golf fan. I'm a golf fan first and foremost. I mean, that's why we do this. And when you're watching golf, thinking to yourself, this is brutal to watch, that's not good, especially from people like you and I who actually are going to still do it, job or otherwise. You know, my point here is I wanted to have you on, not just to talk about this and other things, but just a solution. I mean, I know it's easy to come up with a quick solution, but this isn't good for the product. It's not good for golf. It's not good for the PGA Tour. Huh. And if they're trying as hard as the PGA Tour has tried over the last few years to bring in new fans, this can't be the way to do it. Because if I'm a 15-year-old kid or a 10-year-old kid or an 8-year-old kid and I see the guy on four green take 2 minutes and go to both sides and plumb bob it four times, I'm not going to attach myself to the sport. And that was my big takeaway, was this can't be good for the way golf continues to quote-unquote grow the game. So my question to you is, how is this fixed? And do you feel like the tour thinks this is a problem that needs to be fixed?
They don't think it's a problem. Tim Fincham did not, and Jay Monahan has maintained that strategy. And so you have a rules staff that is essentially unable to enforce the rules. Frankly, there aren't enough officials week to week. The tour really should have more officials, and because to really properly time somebody or to harass them, which didn't go on, you know, it goes on the European Tour. John Paramore just parks his car out in the middle of the fairway behind the. I mean, he's just not even subtle about it.
God bless him.
Yeah, exactly. It's great because that really is all you need. They used to be able to do that on the tour, but now I feel like, gosh, between and it could be this year they're a little more nervous about doing that kind of thing simply because there seemed to be a little bit of an uptick in rulings because of the new rules and guys just saying, hey, I'm going to call somebody. I want to make sure I do this right. So that's kind of spread the rules staff out more, or maybe made them more reluctant to leave their spot, because they did seem to be getting a lot of rulings. So they aren't able to do that policing work that they have done in the past on the tour, not on the level of Paramore. But now, you know, when you don't have the backing of the commissioner, and they didn't have it with Fincham, and they don't have it with Monahan, how do you go about doing it? Because then they don't have the backing of or they don't have the interest from the players to see it done. So it's always been strange to me, as you know, that this is not a concern. I mean, just, again, back to watching Tiger, Rory, and Justin, if you follow that group and you are a fan or a budding fan, it was a pleasure, even though the weather was awful.
Right.
It was enjoyable. It moved. And by the way, the whole field moved pretty well until the greens picked up speed Sunday and the wind came up. And we didn't think there was any chance they were going to finish. And then here we go on Saturday, they got around pretty well. And then Sunday, they were moving at a decent clip. But then as soon as that weather came up, things went another direction, which gets back to green speed. And guys being entitled, believing they are entitled to wait out wind, which is...
It's part of the game.
So, I mean, look, we all wait out. You know, when you sense there's a gust, fine.
Right.
But JB kind of believes that that's his right to wait out wind as long as he needs to wait it out to hit his shot. And that's dealing with a mentality where you're in trouble. I mean, that's like many, many... layers deeper than I could ever fathom, and a generation before could fathom, and that's a product of lack of enforcement.
Yeah, it's wild. He was in the bunker at 16, and again, this is not to pile on JB Holmes. He's getting piled on because he was in contention. There are plenty of guys out there that are brutally slow, but he was in the bunker at 16, and he kind of buried his feet, and he was getting set to hit, and then he backed out of his footprints, and he was standing there. And he was standing there, and I thought my TV froze. Legitimately thought the TV in front of me froze. And he was, I guess he was visualizing what was going on, but it was one of those, I kind of tapped the remote, you know, which obviously does nothing. I don't know why we didn't do that. And I was going, this can't be. And then, of course, then he moved again, and I went, okay, obviously the TV didn't freeze. But, you know, it's what I keep saying about all this is, over the last 18 months, golf has been gifted ratings and numbers and viewers, and it's because of one man and one man only, and that's Tiger Woods. Tiger returned, and you get the emails on Monday, and it's a big blast. It's, you know, the biggest ratings we've had at X event since X, and all of these things are great because people are watching golf, but it is, to me, a little bit of a ticking time bomb, because at some point Tiger's going to quit playing, get hurt, or retire, and that's what's going to happen. And when that happens, golf has to rely on everyone else and the product it's presenting. And if it's presenting a product where guys are taking 3 and 4 minutes to hit golf shots, the numbers are going to plummet a little, like they did, you know, after Tiger left the first time. And that is my fear for the sport that I love the most, is we've got to continue to evolve as a product if we want people to attach to it. And I feel like this took a big step back the last few weeks, and really the entire 2019, because it seems like it's all been controversy.
Yeah, and the solution has always been, I think you probably know I've been ranting about this, I root for Monday finishes that are forced by slow play, because television, for years I've asked television people, doesn't this bother you? Well, no, we just go to another player, and we, you know, the directors, you'll hear Tommy Roy and Brandt Backer and Lance Barrow, they learn how to watch a player's pre-shot routine, so when they know when to go to them. So television has masked the issue, and the only way it gets them mad is if it costs them money. And so, you know, this is a great example. This tournament, you had a great leaderboard, a miraculous that they got this thing finished at Riviera, spilled into prime time, and which CBS probably wasn't thrilled with, but, you know, it that's just one of those things, and a lot of people are watching. And we're talking about this instead of a kind of a nice week, a nice ending to the week. And the sponsor's the one that should be saying, hey, we like mentions, but we don't like them to be all about this kind of thing. and so the television people and the sponsors, and Adam Scott touched on this, are the ones who can make this point to Jay Monahan. The problem I feel in watching this and the Kuchar episode, and then obviously Sergio is a little bit of a European Tour issue, but I think the way it was handled was probably fairly similar to what the PGA Tour would have done, is that the players are running the asylum now, and there is just, to me, a real sense that the tour will officials, the executives, excuse me, not the rule staff, but the executives, work for them, and everything's about kind of keeping them happy. I mean, look, we got the shorts thing now. And, you know, previous commissioners might have said, and we can go on to that, we can go down that rat hole in a minute, but they may have laid out the reasons why, guys, there are reasons you don't want to do this, and I'm sorry, I'm going to overrule you. And if you have to trust me. And I don't see any of that going on. I saw a little of that with Fincham. I see none of it with Jay. It seems like his job is to serve at the pleasure of the players. And that's why I laughed at all the talk of the new rules, that they should do their own rules. Can you imagine in this climate that the decisions book would be twice as thick as the previous one, because every tour player wronged by every little thing would demand a rule of golf decision around some horrible thing that happened to them. And, hey, it's a cruel game. We've all been there. We all know in the heat of the moment you feel wronged. But in the past, there have been authorities in the game who go, okay, yes, this has happened before. You're not the first person. But now it's, yes, we must look into this, and we must bring this to a committee, and we want to keep you happy. You're the stars. And so I think the last week kind of was a culmination of just a little too much coddling.
Yeah, I mean it's just a bummer, because you mentioned it when you first came on, is it's such a fun week. Because you get the best golf course they play all year. You normally get a really, really elite field that includes a lot of veteran players. You almost always get an exciting leaderboard because of that. I mean, you know, you get guys like Bubba, who plays golf the way Riv was almost designed to play. You get guys like Dustin, who love the golf course. We've had Phil play well there over the years. Of course, we got a good leaderboard with JT looking unbeatable for 54 holes. And to me, as I've read and listened and basically prepared for this, the storyline has nothing to do with any of that. Even the Tiger run, which would dominate headlines, seems
so
lost.
Fun.
You know?
Yeah, all lost. And so and again, sometimes controversy is good and lively and fun. But on top of Kuchar, on top of Sergio, it just isn't, it's a little too much.
Yeah. And I'm surprised a little bit, hey, kudos in respect to Adam Scott for what he said the last few weeks. I mean, I've really appreciated it. And surprisingly, the comeback surprise player of the year has nothing to do with golf clubs. It's Brooks Koepka in front of a microphone, where he's apparently learned to not hold back and say what he wants. And it's been massively refreshing to hear, especially with now what he kind of holds when he speaks. I mean, you know, with three major titles, under his belt at this point. But I wonder if at some point it's going to have to fall on the players. If there's going to have to be a guy, you know, go, JB, let's go. What are we doing here? Or if it's going to have to be a guy at the end of a round playing with someone slow, or playing with somebody that's, you know, beating the hell out of a bunker, going, I can't believe someone would do that. That's disrespectful. That's not what we're about. Because if they're not going to get overruled by the people that are supposed to rule them, are they eventually going to have to do it themselves? Which is a bummer, because they shouldn't have to. It shouldn't be on the players to do this. I mean, they can roll their eyes and walk to the next tee and put their hands on their hips, but it shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be on them, the onus on them to do this stuff.
No, they have plenty of other things to be grappling with, and they do, I think, raise these issues privately. But to take it then to another level and go to social media or go to the media and single somebody out brings on a whole series of headaches and things that they should not have to deal with. So that's why you have a rule staff, and you have rules, and you have a commissioner. You pay a lot of money to kind of have a big picture view. And right now that doesn't seem to be the case. The whole thing is a little bit kind of teetering in a weird way that I think hopefully the week was a wake-up call, and they'll button some of these things up. And I'm not optimistic. So.
Yeah, it's all going to have to fall on our golf savior, Phil Mickelson, who seems to be the only one that actually, even if he does take a couple steps back at times, seems to be the one that dismisses some of this stuff. I mean, even the Players' Championship comments where he basically said, you know, it's not an event I'm going to play this year. It's been nice to see Phil do this.
Oh, he's trying to get the rough cut.
Is that what you think?
All that's about.
He wants it chopped down?
Well, yeah, he knows they've got a nice big stockpile of ryegrass seed, and he doesn't want to go there and hit out of 4 to 5 inches of ryegrass seed, freshly fertilized for the Players, and he won't. I think the rough's going to be 2.5 inches, which is a huge difference from 2.5 inches at Bermuda. I mean, that's like it's just night and day. Riviera was about 2 inches last week, and you saw it was just enough sometimes to cause trouble. So yeah, it's just Phil gamesmanship. And I don't think he really likes the course anymore either. There's that.
So how would you rate Tiger? I mean, we've seen Tiger play a couple of events. We've seen great Tiger. We've seen okay Tiger. I felt at times, you know, I was part of PGA Tour Live this week, and it looked at times the Tiger was.
Oh, believe me, Shane, we watched from inside the press center when it was 48 degrees out. I thought, you know, I think I'll watch the guys on live here. Sorry, please.
You weren't going to go out. Well, you know, like.
No, it was cold.
We saw a great finish at Torrey for Tiger, and there were moments this past week, where he looked utterly gassed. He looked a little like what I felt he was at the Ryder Cup. And then there were moments where he looked massively energized. What was your takeaway from Tiger over the last 4 days at RIV, and also what we saw him start the season at the Farmers Insurance?
Yeah, I don't know what it was early in the week. It could be he was a little tired. It could be that he wasn't. He was flat in early into the golf with Thomas and Rory. Like, you'd watch his follow through, and he wouldn't watch the ball very long, and the mojo, as Johnny would say, was not there. It wasn't bad. He wasn't rude, or he wasn't not trying or anything like that. It was just a little flat, I'd say. And then it picked up. I mean, he was having a blast, by the way. He really enjoys playing with those two guys. So who knows? He has to get up. He finally admitted that, you know, because I tried to ask last year, you know, how much time do you have to do preparation-wise before the round, just stretching, loosening up, some exercises, and he didn't want to answer, and he finally kind of fessed that up this week. It's about an hour to an hour and a half, and then I talked to a couple of his people, and it's another solid hour after the round of stuff he does. So he wasn't sleeping a lot last week. And then Saturday, it was just magical that afternoon. His body language was so up. He was having fun. He was calm. He was focused. He was loving putting on a show for the people. I mean, it was tough out there. And then Sunday, that continued. And I went out in the morning, and the swing looks great. The rhythm is phenomenal. The ball striking is just excellent. And then once he kind of got to 10 and then he made a mistake and he was out of it, I think he started to lose interest and got tired, and he admitted to that, which also was a big deal for him to admit to fatigue.
Right.
So I would say the week was, given the weird circumstances, was really good. The negative to me, or the only negative, was maybe that early week stuff. Maybe he's doing a little too much work as a host, which I wrote about for Golf Week. He might want to massage that a little bit. It may have taken something out of his game. And then the putting, he just seemed to really waver on his approach to Riviera's greens. He was kind of on the green books for a while. He was trying to read on his own some, and then he was bringing Joe LaCava in on a few, which you probably might have picked up on the cover. So he was a little bit scatterbrained. he just clearly has trouble with those greens.
Yeah.
And reading them, and I don't know, maybe he needs to do what Phil did and bring out Amy Alcott and walk some holes or something, because that's his only issue with Riviera.
Yeah, it was interesting watching him grind. As you mentioned, there were times where he was really, really grinding on the putts when he was struggling, obviously, and then, of course, and he makes that putt on the ninth to finish his second round. Looks like he's going to make it to the weekend. And there was obviously great moments and some kind of waning moments. I also think we saw it with Phil last year. When he knows he's not going to win, the interest goes out the window. And I think that's just a part of the grind and getting older and understanding. I mean, I don't fault anybody for that. I mean, it's I will say, I mean, flipping script for a second, Jordan Spieth on Sunday shoots 81. And I actually credit the guy after 10. He plays the rest of the way even par on 12 through 16 straight into the fan. I mean, everybody was struggling there. I mean, the Jordan Spieth thing is interesting. I'm going to throw a couple of stats at you about Spieth just because I don't understand what's going on, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. There's been 50 different players that have won on the PGA Tour since his last victory, and he has one top 10 in the world since the Masters last year. And there's been moments, I mean, he even commented, I think it was after the second round, he said, you know, I'm swinging at it great and I feel great. And we saw a little bit of it at Pebble Beach too, through 36 holes. He was right in the hunt and then it completely goes out the window. What is it? Is it mental? Is it physical? What do you feel like's going on for it to just completely just seem like he doesn't know what he's doing on the golf course? And it really seems like it takes one hole.
Yeah, I feel like he's a little scatterbrained with his approach to the golf courses and maybe his actual game. I thought his putting looked really good last week. He claims to not like putting Poa Greens and Riviera, and yet it seems to be a surface that brings out some really good performance from him. So things like that really confuse me. When he'll say or make comments like that, but he didn't have that weird kind of, you know, it was Hank Haney called the yippiness. But his forward press was really bad last year. He'd put the putter down and he'd press, but then there'd be some wiggling, and it didn't look good at all. That was there was not an assertiveness there. So I saw that again. That looked really good to me. And then I had a chat with him randomly out on the course. I was walking by the 10th hole, and I'd seen he laid up. And I was the only person there on Tuesday, and I just walked up to the rope and wanted to see his shot. And he just turned quickly, and he goes, "What would you do here?" I said, "I'd lay up every day." "Nah, I only laid up because I didn't want to wait on the tee," and he laughed. And then he went over in the trees where a lot of the guys try to drive it on that hole and started hitting shots from there, and he was talking himself into the play there. And I followed, and I finally went after a while. I go, I don't understand. You just hit a wedge from 100 yards to, like, a foot.
Right.
And I said, "You're so good with a wedge. You know, why don't you just lay up every day?" "Well, because here I can do this, and it's a soft green, slow green." And some of what he said made sense, but some of it was just so and Cameron McCormick was on the bag. Michael Greller hadn't arrived yet. And it was, some of it was just kind of bizarre and like, talking himself into – the approach, and I wonder if sometimes he's a little bit torn trying to play the game the way it's kind of going to more of this sort of launch angle game and not being more comfortable with his strengths. And I just, it's hard to read, but that's kind of my sense, is that he's wanting to, you know, and this is a scary thing in this kind of the distance era, that a player who's not a bomber tries to adapt, like Luke Donald maybe did, or you can take your pick through the years. So I wonder if that's some of it. But it's, you know, he was great after the rounds with us. He was very, he took me through some stuff on green reading books that was kind of interesting. And then he said, I talk too much. And I was like, "No, this was great. And
we need this."
So it's hard for me to say. I don't feel like it's at the point of a grave concern yet. I think there's still room for him to find some things. He did hit one snap hook off the 13th tee, which I didn't know was possible. With, as somebody who has hit many of them with many kinds of clubs over the years, I didn't even think, I mean, like a real classic low snapper.
Right.
I didn't think that was possible with the modern equipment. Yes. I really didn't.
Send the fan to the hospital snap hook that, thank goodness they're not around when we play kind of shot. Yeah, I understand that.
Thankfully, it was on 13. There was nobody over on the left side. And I've hit that tee shot there many times. But it did surprise me. He made par, by the way. But because he pitched out and he hit a 110-yard wedge shot to about 3 feet. And so that did surprise me, but all in all, he drove the ball pretty well most of the time I watched him last week.
Yeah, it's a little, I mean, we've seen this with Rory and now with Spieth, is it's the curse of the golf superstar. I mean, when you're a superstar in other sports, there's lulls that people go through. But, I mean, if you're a top five quarterback, if you're, you know, a top three shortstop, if you're one of the best basketball players in the world, I mean, go on through. I mean, if you're Federer or Djokovic or the tennis guys who make, you know, the semifinals in every Grand Slam. But, you know, golf basically picks the superstar after a certain major or a certain year, and we consider them superstars for a long, long time. And golf's the hardest sport in the world to be a superstar in.
Yeah.
So when you go 18 months and play bad, or you go 18 months and you're trying to change something, I mean, thank goodness that the current media landscape wasn't around back in 1999. You know, Tiger going through a swing change and had one win, and we would all just been freaking out, you know, or I guess 98 into 99. We would have been losing our minds because we would have said, wait, I thought this was the great hope. You know, this was going to be the guy that was going to change golf forever. And so it's just going to be until he wins again. But I, you know, when you say Jordan Spieth is stuck in purgatory between playing the game maybe he sees and playing the game he thinks he should see, that's a little scary. And I also always say, you know, kudos to Bubba Watson, who for some reason has never been ever kind of challenged to do that. He's just been able to go out there and kind of do it the way he sees it. And that's the rarest of rares right now in pro golf, because it seems like if there's a trend, they all fall behind it and they all want to do that.
Oh, yeah. And they definitely, and, you know, the 10th hole is a great example of that, where they've all convinced themselves you have to drive it at the green. And it is fascinating how certain things get picked up out there, and what things you have to have, or what component you have to have to your entourage now. And I also sense Jordan is kind of tries to stick to his own guns on a lot of those things, and that, again, maybe that could be part of it. He there's so many things. He contended in two majors last year. That last day at Carnoustie, if you were just slightly off, it was so punishing. I spoke with Tiger about that at Torrey Pines, that I said, you know, I've told people the slightest mistake, and he goes, the slightest mistake was just done. And so Jordan shot 76 the last day there, and it was a tough day, but he was there. And so two majors, he's in contention. He's got, you know, he's getting married, different things going on. And I think you're right, it's a product of the era. And I think it's also a fault of, and not to keep bashing the tour, but this youth obsession they have of pushing the young guys, and the future is now, and blah, 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 and all that. It adds pressure that these are that we have to push a new generation of stars. I think those guys feel it, and just in the number of things that they get asked to do, and the relentlessness sort of all that has to wear them down a little bit. And it's just, as you say, it's a different sport, and all the great players have gone into lulls, and I just don't know if the people around the sport now have a very good sense of history and how it works.
Right.
And they don't want to hear this, but it just happens. Rory, on the other hand, I don't know what to make of his game, because he that finish was just, that was just horrendous, those last two holes at Riviera.
They were Rory McIlroy, though.
That
was Rory encapsulated since he won all the majors. He beats a driver on 17, has an iron in, and makes five. And then he beats a driver on 18, has a wedge in, and makes five. And if you go 4-4,
he barely
you got a
hit
really
the green.
Chance.
You left out that he barely hit the 18th green with a wedge.
Oh, I'm watching.
Downwind.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you know, there was a moment. So, again, I was doing live. And, you know, we all love Rory because he's Rory. And because he is one of the few refreshing voices and guys that talk to you and they actually feel like you're talking to a human being. This is just what it is. I mean, again, I think it's probably the fact that they become pro golfers at 21 and they're thrust in the limelight, and you've got to answer all these questions, and you get to a point where you kind of want to just shut off. Rory has always answered questions for better or worse, and I think we all appreciate that from him. And that's why, you get the sense that so many journalists, quote unquote, root for him because it's easy to. But there was a moment on Friday, I think it was Friday, and they were playing the ninth, Rory, JT, and Tiger. And, you know, Tiger was consistently 15, 20 behind those two guys, and he hit it up there about 8, 12 feet, and it was a good shot. And then JT hits it up there with one of those patent Justin Thomas wedges that he takes all the spin off, and he swings at about 70%, and it's beautiful. And it's maybe the best golf shot going right now in the entire world is his ability to hit those wedges like he does. And it lands up there 6-7 feet and just stops, and it was perfect. And then Rory is 25 yards past him right in the middle of the fairway, and he hits a lob wedge to the very back of the green and spins it all the way past the hole, almost off the front of the green, and three putts and makes bogey. And the problem with it is, at this point, over the last couple of years, is I am the least surprised about that. That is the least surprising thing. And when he's standing in the 18th fairway with a wedge in his hand, and I'm sitting there going, if he makes three here, there's an outside chance of getting a playoff. In my mind, as a viewer, I'm thinking he's not going to make three. And that's what's a bummer, because the way he drives a ball, golf ball, I mean, he should have 12 birdie putts a day that he thinks he can make.
It's a mystery, and I'm with you on all those points, and I just don't know where he's at in trying to fix that and trying to remedy that. I don't know if he works with TrackMan too much, too little. I mean, it just feels to me like he should be doing the combine and having fun with yardages, and he's a field he's best when he's a field player. And,
yep.
But that finish was just confounding, especially the way he played during the round, such a great round to put yourself in that position. And I don't know if it – I didn't see him after, so I don't know how angry he was about it.
Right.
If at all.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Thomas. Obviously didn't win, was right there. You know, again, he was kind of like the same thing at the Waste Manager. Didn't have a great Sunday. Is JT the best player in the world to you right now?
He looked really good. It just didn't look like there was any weakness in his game until Sunday when the wind blew. And I guess this is something that – yeah, he noted it after. He's had problems putting in the wind, and he was just killing those putts. I mean, the speed was horrendous. I don't know if he was trying to hit it over the bumps in the green, or I don't know what he was trying to do, but those were just killed. And the greens picked up pace. You have to adapt. It's just not that complicated. But overall, his game looks incredible. And frankly, he overcame that shank, which was amazing too. But he was very much in his element there with Tiger and Rory, and he definitely was the more complete player, at least when those three were together.
Yeah, his wedge game is, again, I mean, I tout it a lot, but I love the way he is basically kind of Dustin Johnsoned his wedge game into being an immediate weapon. And when he hits the ball in the fairway, you feel like he's got a birdie putt. Okay, we got a schedule change, and I'm just going to look at the schedule here. From now, the Mexico Championship this week until the Masters, there are a lot of big events. You've got the WGC Mexico Championship, then you got the Honda, API, Players, Valspar, Match Play, and then Valero Texas Open the week before the Masters, which is going to be the one that gets hit the most. So when you look at the schedule, do you feel
Honda
like
too, I think, is going to take a hit.
Do you feel like these events are going to be hurt by the schedule being this busy? And just basically losing players that normally play in them? Or do you think this is going to be a really fun run of kind of chaos and big names competing and playing as we get closer and closer to Augusta?
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a fun run and chaos and big ratings and excitement. I wonder what it does to, the kind of after the Masters and that run is where I'm curious. But I think the PGA being there will help. I don't understand the schedule really in May, to be honest. I don't see anybody wanting to play Trinity Forest as preparation for the PGA Championship. And I don't see a lot of people playing after the PGA at Colonial because the Memorial's lurking not too long after, and it's time to play the U.S. Open.
Right.
So it's a lot compacted into a very short amount of time, and it will be a lot to ask of players and viewers, and I'm just not sure. I don't think much of the wraparound, so
I thought you were a huge fan.
Not
up your alley, huh?
I just think that ending the season in October fall golf, and once the craziness of the early part of the NFL and college season's over, and you have some, you know, 3-3 teams, and the kind of mania has ended, that the tour could have popped in there and been a part of the sports landscape then. But maybe not. Maybe it's just the right thing to do. I certainly would love the idea of an off season, but it doesn't feel like that's happened. And the way the players are reacting, they don't feel like they had much of one either. So I'm looking forward to it, though. I think it's gonna be a pretty great run, and except for maybe the people at the Honda may not be too thrilled with it.
Take a quick break in the conversation with Jeff to tell you about the all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1 X. They've been redesigned for more speed, more precision, and more consistency than ever before. If you compare the two, the Pro V1, well, it has a softer feel, lower flight than the Pro V1 X. Pro V1 X, a higher flight with more spin and a firmer feel. That's the one that I love playing. Both models continue to provide proven drop and stop greenside control, lasting durability, and unsurpassed quality. And beginning in March, that's next month, they're going to be available in yellow. You've seen Bubba Watson play it out on the PGA Tour, and they'll be available for you at home. Prove how good you can be. Tee up the new Pro V1 or Pro V1X on your next round. It is absolutely worth it. Love the new Pro V1X. I've been playing it all the time. I actually am probably going to go play a little later today. That'll be in my bag. And, of course, the new yellow available in March. Okay, let's get back to Jeff. Yeah, you were mentioning May, and I was looking at this, and you're pretty spot on. After Zurich, it's Wells Fargo, Byron Nelson, PGA, Charles Schwab Challenge, Memorial, Canadian Open, and then of course we get to go to Pebble Beach. So it's going to be there could be 3 and 4 weeks off for big name players on that stretch, which of course would be a bummer for some of those courses. Of course, you and I love Trinity Forest, I know that, and wish it would get maybe a more marquee spot on the calendar, but hey. What are you going to do? At least I was there last year. It was not cold. I'll tell you that. It was not cool.
No, not cold. Not cold. But it would be the perfect place to prep for the Open Championship. It's just that I think it's too hot by then, and the club essentially closes, and I don't think they wanted to have a late June event there.
Shaq, that makes too much sense. Can you come up with an idea that maybe is a less sensible idea? That would be,
that'd
be way too brilliant. All right, I got to ask you, what's you know, we're what, a month and a half into 2019, and again, I'm not going to mention kind of the wraparound season, just kind of starting in Hawaii here. What has surprised you the most, and what have you been a little bit the most disappointed in over the last 6, 7, 8 weeks?
I guess I am surprised with Spieth's play and just sort of the sense that things are a little bit chaotic. I thought he might get kind of refreshed in the off season, it seems like it's sort of a continuation of what went on last year. So I would probably put that up there with perhaps with McIlroy's weird play continuing. But otherwise, not a whole lot. I kind of expected Phil to be picky where he plays and Tiger to ease into the season. So probably the bigger surprise is that there wasn't more of a reaction to what Sergio did, because it's really unprecedented in the history of sports to have somebody vandalize the playing surface and not be told to stay home for a long period of time. I guess that would be the most surprising thing, but hey, he's the player. He's going to have to answer to his peers, and the European Tour clearly wants him to be a Ryder Cup captain someday. I don't know if that's going to happen. So I that would be about it on the surprise part. The biggest disappointment so far would probably be that we just, I had seen the Jay Monahan era as probably being potentially comparable to the Rob Manfred era and Adam Silver in the NBA. And so far it just seems like that's not happening. And the attention to some of the details related to the golf and the product of golf is doesn't seem to be quite on the radar as much as it should as the marketing driven things, you know, and they have a lot of marketing people now in the ranks there. And that's fine. You need that, but you also need a golf person in the room. I mean, I'll give you an example. Last week at the Genesis, they announced the new status there, the invitational status. And to most fans, it means nothing to the fan.
Right.
It's a smaller field and more money for the guys. And, but in L.A., we have 94 years of tradition of it being an Open, and they had an opportunity for, and I wrote a blog post here just today, kind of ways Tiger can make this event his and also keep it tied to its incredible history, which was as one of the early most important events in the history of the PGA Tour, as an Open event. And yeah, the field's going to get smaller, but keep a couple of Monday qualifying spots. Keep the Sifford exemption, keep the Collegiate Showcase, keep the local PGA sectional qualifier that, you know, every 3 or 4 years produces some crazy little local story that is just a great, fun anecdotal element of the tournament that's been, if you go back through the years, always part of this event as an Open event. Babes Aharias qualified for the Los Angeles Open. In fact, you know, I think I need to go back and add that to my post.
it'll be in there before you listen to this.
Yeah, so I asked in the press conference, and Monahan gave me a very chilly answer and kind of gave me a Jeff. You know, whenever they use your name, it's always a sign they're not thrilled with the question. And he wasn't prepared for the question. And I told him I was going to ask, not him, but I told some people at the tour, I'm going to ask, you know, or what are we doing to maintain the Open element at all, if at all? And they hadn't thought of it. I don't think it really had gone through their heads that was something that was part of this event and a way for Tiger to look like a kind of a hero locally. Because the first question, of course, I got was, so does this mean no more Monday qualifying? I got that on Twitter and Instagram. All these people wanted to know. That was their first reaction. That's a golf. It's an inside golf thing. I'll grant you that. But it's just one of those little golf questions that could have been addressed and wasn't. And so those things need to stop kind of falling through the cracks.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you look at big events, and we'll look at the majors because I think you and I agree that the four majors are the four majors. When you look at, you know, last year, the PGA Championship, if you said, Shane, write five things you remember from the PGA Championship down, I think Ben Kern would be in the top five. You know, a PGA professional that plays well, makes the cut, you know, is wearing the big bucket hat, all that stuff.
Yeah.
If you think about U.S. Opens in the past, and you write down storylines,
sure,
from amateurs playing well and having a great day, and the 16-year-old, I mean, even Cameron Champ, who we tout all the time, you know, now is this kind of, you know, featured group guy because of one thing that he does well. I mean, he does a lot of things well, but the one thing that really stands out is, you know, when you think back to him at A&M at Aaron Hills and he's hitting 50 past Rory, you know, those are the storylines that come out, and the same thing happens to the Masters with the amateurs. And, of course, you know, if you look at the Open, the same thing. I mean, if you think about St. Andrews, we had two amateurs in the hunt going into the final round, and, you know, those to me are the storylines that just – when you look past the champion and maybe somebody that gave the championship away, those are the things that golf fans attach themselves to, and it is kind of a bummer that might be lost here considering the history of the L.A. Open. And, I mean, it is – no matter what anybody wants to say, for golf people, it's the best event every year on the calendar. I mean, for outside of the majors, it is. And it's something we know, and it's one of the few golf courses that we all know the holes at. People know 10, they know 18, you know, maybe they know 6. I mean, that doesn't happen much. There's not a lot of golf courses like that that we remember the holes on.
No, that continuity is really vital. That's why I was doing some questions for a college student asking about the Masters, and I mentioned that's one of the things that brings people in who aren't even serious golf fans. They know the holes, and they know what, when a shot's landed in the right spot to feed to the hole, and they're not even serious fans. But there is something to be said for that continuity, and Riviera is not really a course that should translate well to TV, and yet somehow it does. And so these are the little things that I just hope that they continue to be aware of, and it worries me as you have a lot of turnover and institutional knowledge at these organizations that they lose sight of the fact that you still want the core golf fan to be entertained, and if they're not enjoying it, then why would somebody be willing to turn on the telecast, or why would they tell a friend to, hey, you know, you should watch, it's fun, Tiger's in contention today, or something like that. So it's also the player's job to sometimes speak up to that. And I think that is one of the cool things this year so far, is we have seen players be more outspoken. Adam and Brooks and even Tiger and Phil are just way more opinionated than they used to be. And and they're as engaged as ever in all this. They're following it, and they're reading stuff, and that's fun too. I think that when they're not engaged and they're aloof, you're like, well, that's not it. That's just not a good feeling either. And tennis got to that point. I mean, tell me, you know tennis well. I mean, was it Jim Courier reading the book in between points? It was kind of like a breaking point for tennis and players and their relatability to fans, because things seem to have changed a lot on that sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's I continue to be impressed by the golfers that seem like real, true humans. You know, I mean, I've become, you know, acquaintances with a Max Homa type like that, who, you know, seems to use social media as a tool to interact with people. And, you know, I just wish there'd be other, maybe some of the bigger names that would do that, because they used to, I feel like. I mean, Bubba used to do that all the time. And I mean, I don't know if it's just kind of growing out of the social media era, but I know it's not easy always, because you say one thing wrong and then you delete it from your phone. I mean, that's what we've seen other times. But it's been an interesting year. We got a lot of big events coming up. When are you going to be on the road next?
I'm going to the to Bay Hill and the Players, but now we didn't touch on the pants. I know you're going to defend the going to the shorts thing, aren't you?
No, I'm not. Let me just tell you, I don't care. You can wear shorts or pants or Umbros or whatever you want to wear in a practice round. I do not care. Is it something that bothers you because it's just a tradition from so many years?
No, it's not even the tradition element. And I'm also kind of warming up my arguments today for, we're going to have this on Golf Channel on alternate shots. So I'm really working. I'm getting my reps in here, frankly. First of all, when you see a pro golfer coming in their uniform at a golf tournament, they stand out. When they dress like the spectators, they don't stand out.
You're telling me Kelly Kraft's outfit in the third round stood out more than some of the guys watching with the joggers?
I have no idea what Kelly Kraft wore in the third round.
He was wearing, it looked like sweatpant joggers and a hoodie sweatshirt. And
by the way, I saw multiple hoodies last week.
Trying to
rock the hoodie in the wind. Frank, the golf swing in the hoodie just not working. I watched them and I'd go, no, that doesn't look comfortable.
No. I made that mistake at Bannon.
It looked okay. Visually, it looked okay, but functionally, didn't work. I did not see Kelly Kraft. You have to throw out last week, because it was a layered thing. It was so cold in the morning. You had to wear. I mean, Tiger was doing the ski cap over the cap, and
right.
It was a funky look, but it had to be done. Okay, so back to the pants. So number two,
you've got multiple points on this. I love it.
Well, like I said, I'm warming up for today. So number two, golf pants have never been better in terms of the cut, the make, the function, the comfort level, the look. To the point of, unlike white belts, we have spread this kind of pant to men elsewhere wearing these pants. So golf has actually been fashion forward on the pant front. And there's just no excuse for being uncomfortable now. You're just not trying if you're wearing uncomfortable pants. So I get it. It's hot. They're out there practicing. They don't want to wear them. I get that. I understand why they want to go this way. And then, you know, the final thing I would say is that every other sport, and I know I've driven this home probably with you, but every other sport, the athletes are making an effort to look more stylish, to bring a little more gravitas to the way they dress to and from the game. And golfers are going the opposite direction. And I don't think it's any coincidence that you see golfers dropping down the endorsement lists, and athletes and, I mean, ultimate fighters are getting more endorsement deals than golfers. And that's embarrassing. Golfers have always been, at least the elite guys, have always been very high up those lists, and Ricky Fowler still rakes in huge money, and Tiger and Phil and Jordan and Rory. And that's about it. And after that, it's a pretty steep decline. I mean, you know, Justin Thomas is bringing some style out there, but then he goes like monster schlubby off the course. And I get it, some companies like that, but I think the trends say that athletes are stars, and people like them kind of acting like they know they're stars, And I'll leave it at that. Oh, and Larry Fitzgerald finally saw a guy playing golf wearing joggers who pulled him off.
That's it. We've got one. We have. So the list is one and one only.
We told him. He saw us standing there, and he must watch a lot of the Golf Channel because he turned. He went, "Hey, I know you." I'm like, "Oh my gosh, you do watch a lot." And I said, "You know, we were just, don't take this the wrong way, but we were just admiring you. You actually are somebody pulling this look off." Of course, you know, he's like 6'4", 235 cut, but they were the right length. He just looked. It just worked, you know, but anyway, I just think it's one of those things where, again, but to our conversation earlier, the players are kind of running the show. The players want to be comfortable. And this is one where the previous commissioner said, no, guys, trust me on this one.
There, I will give you this. And I live in Arizona, and obviously we wear shorts a lot of the year. Always look better in pants than shorts. Always. There's no debate. That is just always going to be a thing.
Well, especially the way they make the pants now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the pants are great. I mean, the FootJoy pants are great. I mean, everybody makes great pants. They're always awesome. You'll be out doing some stuff.
Yeah.
You'll be out. Amazing. You'll be out for a couple of weeks. And then, of course, getting set for Augusta. And then we can see you on Golf Channel. How many days a week are you doing TV now?
We're morning drive on Mondays, and then we do alternate shot on Tuesdays. And then, yeah, I got some really fun projects for Golf Channel this year with features around the majors, getting to do some stuff that will be, just kind of fun history things, trying to bring back stories of cool stuff from the past. Pebble, we're going to get into the 1929 version of the course, you know, which I think is actually relevant to the way the tournament will play out. And Augusta, we're going to look at there's some really cool stuff with the history of Bobby Jones and women's amateur golf and Marion Hollins, who was such a big part of the design. So going to get to tell some fun stories about, you know, history in the way that I like to, which is to kind of do it in a light, easy way and let people know a little bit about, you know, that there were golfers before the year 2000. Oh, and Tillinghast too for the PGA.
Yeah, it's a great year for guys like you and Andy Johnson. It's just like
it's
like here is all the best. Here's all the best course designers and golf courses, and let's explain it to people why. And that's why I'm excited about the majors, because I think the addition of Ireland on the Open Road is going to be fun. That's going to be a big week. We'll see how. Let's see if it's really windy. If the wind lays down, we can really kind of pencil Rory in for being maybe in the top five. Jeff, I joked about being an influencer, but you're one of the best out there. We are happy, thankful as golf people that you continue to pump out great stuff and excited to see what you got coming up the next few months.
All right. Well, thank you, Shane. I appreciate it as always.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole. It's in the hole.
A big thanks to all of you out there for listening. It's always a lot of fun to do these. That was a good conversation with Shaq, who I've always loved having on. The guy just is, he's an insider, and he knows what's going on in and around the game, and he's not scared to back away from his points, which I think is very important in this day and age, especially when you're out there, and especially when you see something that you want to make a point of. Just big thanks to BetDSI and to Titleist and to FootJoy for being a part of the clubhouse week in and week out. A thanks to you guys. Make sure you check out BetDSI and use that promo code BACON for 100% match, the new FootJoy FJ Fury, and of course the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. I think the yellow Pro V1 and Pro V1X, when they come out, I think you're going to be seeing them everywhere. I think everybody's going to be into them. People like changing up the ball color. I think that will be a thing that'll be popular for all golfers, no matter where you play. Have a great week. Should be a fun one in Mexico. Tiger's there. Phil's there. A lot of big names are playing. And the schedule, as we mentioned with Shackelford, just continues on as we get closer and closer to the Masters and Augusta. Hope you guys get a chance to play some golf, and we'll check back in next week.